Welcome to the Owning Your Sexual Self podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Main, awesome wife and dog mom for life. I'm a sex therapist turned sex coach, and I run a successful business selling relationship enhancement products. I absolutely love talking about all things sex. So you can expect this podcast to explore all things related to women's sexual health because that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you discover and embrace what brings you pleasure so that you can own your sexual self. If that sounds good to you, then keep listening and let's fucking do this. Hello, hello. We are back for another episode and I have on a very special guest today, Dr. Matthews. Dr. Matthews is a board certified OBGYN, minimally invasive gynecology surgeon, and NAMS certified menopause specialist. As both a mother and a wife herself, her goal is to help women of all ages maintain their own quality of life while keeping up with the day-to-day needs of their families and careers. Her practice emphasizes the importance of patient education and empowerment to make the best possible decisions for themselves and their bodies. Her areas of expertise include endometriosis, fibroids, chronic pelvic pain, polycystic ovary syndrome, and premenstrual dysphoric disorder. I am very excited to be able to talk with her today about sex and intimacy before, during, and after menopause. This is a topic that I've actually had a request for on the podcast, and so I'm really excited to be able to bring on an expert in this field to be able to talk more about this thing that really all women go through, right? So whether you are currently in menopause, maybe it's not your time yet, or you're postmenopausal, this is going to be an episode that is helpful for you to hear. All right, tune in, and I'm so excited.
The thing I focus a lot on, I hear a lot, almost every day, is menopause related. All the issues associated with menopause. And I think intimacy and sex surrounding that is so interesting because it's so multifactorial how it's affected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm excited to be able to tie that into the conversation specifically because, yeah, how many women, like we were saying, like maybe go into menopause early and they're not even certain like what it is, what's going on. And they start to feel that decline in sexual energy and libido and maybe lose some body confidence and, you know, all this stuff. So, yeah. All right. I'm excited. Let's jump into this. So can you give us a little bit of background? What kind of got you started in this field in the first place?
So, I went to medical school thinking I was going to be a pediatrician. And then when I did my rotations, I really found that I loved children and hanging out with kids, but not so much pediatrics because it was dealing with a lot of maybe, a little bit neurotic parents. So that kind of like shied me away from that. And then in my training, what I really found I gravitated towards things that involved using my hands, things that involved, you know, just being very sort of hands-on, physical, like, relief of pain. So really surgical kind of things, which surprised me because I never really thought about that before. And then I gravitated to OBGYN because I really liked taking care of women. I felt like women really needed good health and they were very often, apt to kind of forget about themselves in the grand scheme of taking care of everyone else in their life. But when it came to their health and they were, you know, when you tasked them with taking care of themselves, they really did a good job. They really like took ownership of it and really wanted to get better. And so we're sort of invested in their health when they really took a moment to focus on it. Yeah. So I gravitated toward that. And then I kind of swung back around to the surgery side because after my residency in OBGYN, I ended up doing a minimally invasive GYN surgery fellowship. And the cool thing about that is I also really got to pay attention to the other aspects of gynecology that often get kind of lost in the world of obstetrics and dealing with the pregnant woman. You kind of lose sight of a lot of the other things like sexual health and wellness, menopause management, hormones and hormone therapy, chronic pelvic pain, sexual, you know, pain with intercourse, all those other aspects of GYN care that really I don't think they get enough attention. And I don't think doctors really in our training as OBGYN get a lot of time to like train and understand that. So I kind of got a 2-year fellowship where I got, you know, where I learned about those aspects of gynecologic care. And I actually
was very grateful to find some excellent mentors who really focused on that. And they encouraged me to do a certification with the North American Menopause Society. And there's like an exam certification that you can do to be a certified menopause practitioner.
Oh, wow.
So now I do that, which is part of my general GYN practice, but it's like a lot, I mean, interest and just, you know, kind of passion and focus of mine. So I'm very apt to ask about those things, just even if, you know, if, and kind of sort of forewarn women about like what it could be. Mm-hmm. You're right. There's very little out there, about what menopause is. And I think there's such a taboo around talking about it that most women don't know what to expect or when it could come, what it even means.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned the part about education, because obviously this podcast, we primarily focus on things related to sex. And I remember going through my certificate program for sex therapy and sex education. That was a program open pretty much to anybody postgraduate. And so we had OBGYNs in there and midwives and nurse practitioners and all of these medical professionals, which was really cool because we got that. We got like the best of both worlds, right? You had clinicians over here and then you had basically doctors over here. But that's one of the things that they brought up, the med side of the people in this program, was that the sex stuff wasn't even talked about, you know, very heavily in their program. And that's like the number one thing, right, that I feel, you know, when people are going to the doctor, they're already scared to ask questions about their sex and sexual health. So I really do feel like it's the job of clinicians to put that olive branch out there and say, hey, do you have any questions about this?
I 100% agree. So yes, that is one of my questions with almost every single one of my patients who comes in. Even if it's not specifically, like they're not even necessarily coming in for general wellness, it might be for a specific complaint, whether it's pelvic pain or fibroids or whatever, but I always ask them, how does that tie into intercourse? Is it, you know, how does that affect their sexual health? Because you're right, most women are sort of embarrassed to talk about it, and they apologize. Mm-hmm. When they have a question about it, they're, okay, I'm really sorry, I just need to ask this. I don't know if you're the person to ask this. Mm-hmm. You know, the caveat. I'm like, yes, no, it's me. Like, you're the one. You're supposed to talk to your medicalist about this. Like, who else would you talk to about this? But it's true, though. Like, our training is definitely deficient in sexual health, unfortunately. Yeah.
Absolutely. So for you, you said you're OBGYN, but you're more so on the GYN side now. What is the most common question that you get from patients that pertains specifically to their sex life?
It depends on the age group. I get a lot of, you know, is it supposed to hurt? Or, you know, or like, is certain types of pain, like, is that normal? And most of the time it's not. So diving into that a bit, there's often ways to rectify and help that. And then, you know, also kind of, some misconceptions. It might be kind of things that particularly in that menopausal age group that kind of come up where they're sort of like offhandedly like, well, I don't really want to have sex anymore. It's like, I'm not really interested in it anymore. Or like, or you know what I mean? They kind of offhand and sort of make a comment about, no, we're not really, I'm not really sexually active. And I sort of, well, why not? Mm-hmm. You know, is there a reason behind that? Is it just like you're too busy or like you don't like your partner, or is it, you know, something else, you know, more physical or more physiologic that we could potentially, you know, work on, so, you know, help. Mm-hmm. And then I just never thought to ask for help from that perspective. So I think it depends on the time frame, really, but I think really about how sex should feel, and then also, you know, what can I do about things like the libido issues, I think, are another prominent topic.
Yeah, and libido is something that in my profession too, it's got to be the number one thing that I get asked about. So for you, from this medical perspective, would you say that libido is more so emotional, or would you say mental or a physical problem typically for women?
It's everything. And that's kind of where I start with, okay, it's way more complicated than people realize. And I think especially for women, because everything that has to come together, as you know, like to even get to the point of arousal, forget about even getting to climax, but like just arousal, interest, all of those things. There's so many aspects of it, right? So, you know, I'm talking to, say, a mid-40-year-old woman, and she's just like, I'm just like, my husband, I feel really bad for my husband, I love him, you know, but I just really, like, could care less. Like, I just don't have any interest at all. I mean, essentially, I feel like there's something wrong with me. And I'm like, no, most of you're a career-driven woman, you've got two kids, you're like, you know, running a household, you're dealing with XYZ, a ton of lists in your head of things that you're trying to complete and get done in a day, and like the last thing on your list is sex. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how it is. And so yes, there's an entire mental, emotional component to it. As you alluded to, especially when hormonal changes are happening, there's that aspect of it as well. And how your body is potentially changing and kind of betraying you at certain points of metabolism changes and stuff. And so again, you're sort of self-conscious about those changes and how that affects, you know, how you feel. As far as like, do you consider yourself, as you think or feel like a sexual being? Mm-hmm. And then there's all of the other physiologic, physical things. Like, again, is sex comfortable? Is it painful? Or is it, you know, are you able to achieve orgasm? Is it something that, you know, you've explored on your own? There's all these other aspects of it too that, so yeah, it's like, it's all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of break it down to patients from that perspective and then kind of say, all right, what of those things, if you can, potentially all of them, if you check all of those boxes, and you should address some of the things, you know, maybe before the others. But, you know, it's about kind of pulling all of that together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, like, it, because I would agree too. It is a mixture of all of the things, and I love the fact that you're a provider that is so forthcoming about this. Like you said, you're specifically asking these questions to your patients, so you're giving them the opportunity to speak about that, and that's one thing. So on my side, you know, doing the sex therapy and sex education and coaching, I can't so much help with the physical aspect of it, right? Like, I'm always recommending go see either a pelvic floor physical therapist or talk to your OBGYN or even your primary care. Like, if that's who you have access to, like, easily, have the conversations, because, yeah, we aren't, and same for you, right? You're not the one that's going to be sitting down and having a therapy session and long-term care, you know, conversations with them. So I think it's such a team effort when it comes to these sorts of things.
I agree. And I think a lot of the time it's just about kind of creating that relationship where they can feel, you know, open to talking about it and not judged about mm-hmm. it. And I think there's, of course, like decades of, you know, media and generational and cultural sort of, you know, taboos surrounding sexuality and, you know, female sexual health and all those things. Like, you know, women, it was sort of almost shameful to be considered sexual. And like, so I think, and you know, myself coming from a pretty conservative cultural background, like I could see that. I talk to women in particular on that angle a lot too, because I feel like that's something that is sort of an underlying, sometimes hidden, and sometimes sort of, you know, sort of in the background type of concern for a lot of women too, that it's sort of, you know, not supposed to be your concern, especially as we age, right? Like, it's almost expected that women are even told sometimes, unfortunately, by practitioners, well, this is just what comes with getting older. This is just, you know, your body changes and, you know, tough shit, that's just how it is. Like, you know, deal with it. Like, don't complain about it. Can't do anything about it. And I think that's, like, my biggest, you know, sort of call it a platform, passion, whatever. So, yes, there's actually a lot you can do about it. And none of us doesn't have to be like this, like, death sentence. Mm-hmm. Like, you can actually still have a very robust life in all different ways, and in health and in sexual health and everything, despite or during or whatever, because of menopause. It doesn't matter. Like, all of those things should be true. But I think there's a lot that we're sort of fighting against, kind of changing that mental preconception.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear that specifically too from women, let's say if they've had a hysterectomy, right? And it's like that loss of womanhood almost for a lot of them. And it's like going through that grieving process. But I would love to hear, you know, from you. So if we're thinking specifically about menopause and kind of that before, during, and after, can you tell us what would some of the changes that a woman would see as they're going through that, either within their body or even within sexuality when it comes to libido, arousal, things like that?
Yeah. So, okay, so menopause is a big one. So I start out with saying, first of all, menopause by definition, it's one full year of not getting your menstrual cycle. That's by definition. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're on hormonal therapy, then your period just happens to stop because you're on a particular birth control. That's not what I mean. That's just your natural cycle unhindered. When it stops for one full year, that's when you consider someone in menopause. But the thing is, perimenopause is the time leading up to it, and that can start 5 to 7 years before your actual menopause will stop, right? So those 5 to 7 years can be fulfilled with all of the symptoms that are typically sort of known as menopausal symptoms without actually having missed periods or you know, even still having regular cycles or starting to have somewhat irregular cycles or changes in your cycle. So what is that sort of constellation of symptoms? It's actually pretty, so the typical ones people talk about, right? Hot flashes, night sweats, difficulty sleeping, mood swings, irritability, depression and anxiety. That's a big one that I focus on because I also point out to people that if you have underlying depression and anxiety, or if you had a history of, say, like, bad PMS, PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is another thing that's very underdiagnosed, and or postpartum depression, like any of those sort of, you know, mood disorders that are influenced by our hormonal changes, those things can be exacerbated in perimenopause. So say if you have a history of depression that you're well managed, whether it's just through sort of, you know, therapy, clinical support, coping mechanisms, whatever it is, or you're on medication and you've been doing fine, you've been great. During those hormonal fluctuations, you can actually see a ton of changes from that perspective as well. And that often gets, you know, you don't realize what's happening. And it's a very normal kind of symptom of menopause that goes sort of under discussed. So mood changes are a big category there. Other things, a big one, I cannot tell you how many times during the day a woman will bring up waking, unprecedented waking, unprovoked. They're like, I'm still working out, I'm still, you know, I'm eating really healthy, I'm really trying, I don't understand, the scale keeps going up. And it's this underlying metabolism change that comes with perimenopause, menopause as well, that the metabolism just completely slows down, it totally changes on you. Mm-hmm. So everything that you've been doing to maintain is no longer working. You have to kind of change your perspective. So that's a big one. So again, that whole body consciousness, how you feel, like, you know, you feel different, you don't feel like, you know, your best self, you know, for your own definition, because your body's changing on you there. So all of those things, the sleep disturbances, obviously, like, you know, difficulty sleeping, being up at night, fascinating, right? One could be the hot flashes, other times it could be the anxiety, other times it's just your sleep rhythm is totally off. And then physically, other things that happen besides the waking would be sort of the changes in estrogen in our body definitely affect our vaginal tissues. Mm-hmm. So the vaginal, because it's heavily estrogen dependent. So when estrogen levels start changing, you start experiencing dryness and there's less elasticity and there's less, you know, besides less lubrication, there's more friction, more irritability, more frequent vaginal infections, more frequent UTI. So again, things aren't happy down there. And then, so how can you even think about, like, feeling stimulated and aroused when, you know, it's just not a happy place because things are changing on you? So, you know, things, there are ways to address that like people just overlook or don't realize that, you know, it's something that can be easily sort of fixed or corrected, that can help with one, sex as it is. So if you are sexually active and, like, you know, things are changing about sex and what's happening in the bedroom, then, you know, then you can help that or aid it with something simple, lubricant, you know, from the standpoint of, like, being able to help with that moisture and also elasticity, sort of bridging that gap. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that, like, I feel like we naturally sort of or have inclination to think about, because it's almost as if they kind of accept the change because they've always been told that it's just a change they have to deal with.
Yeah, that vaginal dryness, that's something that comes up a lot with me, and more so the product side of what I do. And, you know, talking through lubrication, I see that you both said, like, lubricant should be as important as like an item in your skincare, right? Like you said, if your skin is dry, you would apply a lotion to it or moisturizer to it. Same should be for your vagina. And I love being able to share that with women, you know, because you often get asked about the difference between a water-based or a silicone or a hybrid. You have all these different options, right? So I know usually what I recommend, but I'd love to hear from you. What would you recommend for somebody that is experiencing dryness?
So honestly, to me, first of all, I think it's really very personal, and you want a good quality product. Like, exactly. Anything that you would do, you know, things, the considerations you would take for something that you would put on your face, do the same for your gem. You want something that isn't going to disrupt the, you know, microbiome and natural balance of things. You want something that's a clean product that's well developed. So, you know, I, full disclosure, I'm on, you know, the Sexual Wellness Council and medical advisor for a company called Playground. And the reason I got involved with this company, it's a lubricant company, because it totally stood for all the things that I look for, you know, when I recommend products to a patient, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking for something that, again, is very thoughtfully created. I can, you know, very proudly say that it was created by women for women, you know, like just, that's the whole idea behind it. And I actually got involved in a completely sort of random way. It came up in like a random dinner conversation with like friends. I had nothing to do with it. And I just lit up and started talking about how exciting that was, that there's somebody actually working on this and actually like, you know, talking about it and like focusing on women and women's sexual health and sexual pleasure and like really being able to kind of embrace that. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, but I'm like all about it. And they were like, you know what, you need to talk to them because, you know, you could probably have a lot of insight. So we just kind of sort of totally hit it off. And so, you know, to me, the product being sort of focused on maintaining that sort of natural health and not disrupting the local environment is really what's important. It needs to enhance, not, you know, disrupt. So kind of that focus to me, I think, is really what's important. More so even than I think water-based versus silicone-based. And again, depending on the user, if condoms are involved, et cetera, like you've got, you know, certain things that you have to sort of focus on there. Mm-hmm. And then the different ways that people respond in their own sort of natural, you know, environments respond to those things. I think that's the kind of clean product, well designed, mm-hmm. as well, you know, sort of thought out was more important to me.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so what other tips, obviously using lubrication or having these conversations, what other tips would you be giving to patients to maintain a healthy sex life from this more the physical medical side?
So definitely focusing on what's going on physiologically, what's going on in the local, you know, environment. Like I said, I'm very cognizant of the hormonal change. There will be times where I even recommend vaginal estrogen. And local vaginal estrogen therapies, because that may be just one of the underlying issues. And if you can correct that on a very basic level, you can definitely improve, you know, the environment from that perspective and kind of restore that balance. And that's not necessarily like overriding the need for lube or anything. It's just sort of correcting the underlying, sort of problem with the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very forward and very honest about that. I think it's incredibly safe. I think there's incredibly good data around it. You know, I always actually, a lot of my patients are, you know, very much into the data and the information. So I actually direct them. There's an amazing physician statement that's written by the North American Menopause Society about genitourinary syndrome of menopause and the changes that happen to the vagina and like what kind of treatments that are available to help that, which I think is so well written. I actually sent it to colleagues that are sort of wary about vaginal estrogen because there's such good data about it and how safe it is that, like, I just think that patients and providers need to be better educated about it. And again, it's not necessarily for everyone, but again, people should know what's available for them.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I'm also really kind of open about self-exploration a little bit, you know.
I was hoping you would say that.
Yeah, I'm actually very much open about it. And that kind of gets, I mean, I don't know, I think we have a good relationship with my patients, so I feel like they don't think it's weird when I mention it. But, like, to me, it's no one knows yourself and your body better than yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, no one knows it. So if anyone is going to figure out what's going to work for you, what's going to help you get aroused, what's going to stimulate your, you know, your anatomy, what you need to have in your mind, what kind of things you need to watch or hear or read or whatever it is in order to kind of inspire those thoughts, that's you. That's completely individual, mm-hmm. right? And you can't expect, you know, a partner to necessarily be able to read your mind and body to that level. So to me, I think that's a huge part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that changes. Mm-hmm. Like, it could change, right? What worked for you in your 20s may not be the same in your 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s. obviously. So, you know, a little bit of that self kind of exploration and really kind of telling what works for you and how it's different, or maybe it's something that needs to be, you know, more stimulated or whatever, more exciting or more rowdy or whatever it is that kind of triggered you on, like, that's, you know, it's important to find that out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's the basis of most of the work that I do. And so you heard it first here directly from a doctor. Please masturbate more. It's actually benefiting you in the long run in so many ways. So yeah, I'm so glad. And I'm so happy also to hear that you are having that conversation with your patients again. You sound like a great resource for the women that you get to work with.
Yeah, I think again, sometimes it's interesting because it even starts out sometimes for some women to be uncomfortable kind of point, but then they really open up and they really talk about it and, you know, all the things sort of hindering from them from trying to do that. And then when they do start, you know, being able to take a little time for themselves and whether, however it might be that they need to like stimulate, like if you just, really see them learning about themselves and really kind of opening up and being open to other kind of experiences, and it definitely benefits their partners. So, you know, from that perspective, it's a really kind of helpful and healthy for themselves and for their relationships. So,
yeah, absolutely. And speaking of partners, what kind of guidance or conversations or support would you say that is helpful for partners of women that are going through menopause, conversations that they can have or things that the woman can say to educate her partner just to kind of make the sex life a little bit more easy and really help them understand what it is that they're going through?
Yeah, I think that's a really, do you meet with couples? Like, do you meet with partner as well? Yeah, so I think that's where, you know, you definitely have a better sort of insight on that and access to educating on that front, because I don't see the partners usually. So, you know, from that perspective, it's usually me kind of guiding my patient and, you know, the female that I'm seeing to be like, you know, being open and somewhat honest about what is going on, kind of naming it and really kind of addressing it sort of head on, in the sense that, listen, going through some stuff, but I am interested in making this better. Like, that it's not something that you're sort of like, I could care less anymore, and somehow it's reflecting on their relationship and on the partner and how, you know, what's coming between them. Like, it shouldn't, right? It should just be like, I'm going through this, some things are changing, I'm working on it. It is something I'm interested in, something I care about. And just being open and honest from that perspective, and like even engaging them in the idea of, I may want to try some things that are different. I may want to, you know, explore with different things. You know, I've never needed lubricant before, but now I want to use it. I'd like to use it. So stuff like that, right? That just, or whether it's sex toys or whether it's like, I want to watch this or read this, like before we're intimate or included in our foreplay or whatever it might be, to kind of help engage and make it more of a, you know, more of a everyone's involved, both perspectives are involved, and like sort of engaging them in that journey of kind of rediscovering. I think that really makes it more, I don't know, less isolating, right? Like, because you feel like you're going through it yourself, but it's at the same time, you want your partner engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be able to have that support from them. And, you know, I've been on both sides of this, where a woman is open and shares with her partner, and sometimes they're not always receptive, but I've worked with women where the partner is receptive, and sometimes it's the partner's reaching out to me because their woman is going through menopause, and they don't know what to do. They're trying to be supportive. They're trying to reach out and try the different things, and she's just completely shut down. And so there's so many different aspects of this, but I think that's so great. Just, I think sharing, at least giving your partner the opportunity to have that conversation and to be supportive. And you really said it best earlier, right? Like, just because you're going through menopause, that doesn't mean it's the death of your femininity or your sexuality, right? You can still be a sexual person even post-menopausal, because I've certainly heard that before, right? Well, I'm going through menopause, there's no reason for me to have sex or orgasm anymore.
100%.
Yeah. I'm like, oh gosh, it makes me so sad.
I agree. I feel the same way. And I agree. Like, I think, you know, it's just really about that concept of intimacy that comes in. You know, you can be intimate in so many different ways with your partner, and I think sharing this aspect of it, of how intimacy works its way into the bedroom and becomes sexual as well. Like, you know, you would work on it if you were having issues with communication verbally. Like, why wouldn't you work on it if you're having this? It's just another form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another way of, like, you know, figuring out what works for each of you. So, I think talking about it. And actually, so the other thing I also want to mention is, you know, when I've done other sort of talks and done some things on Facebook and things of that nature, and I've had questions from people all over being like, how do I find a doctor that's open to talking about this kind of stuff? And I would say a really great resource is the North American Menopause Society's website. And I don't work for them in any way. I'm just like, really proud of being a certified practitioner. And they actually have a database of certified practitioners all over.
Oh, awesome.
In the U.S. and Canada, I believe. And so you can actually search to see if anybody in your area, in like state or zip code or whatever, is certified. And I'm going to tell you that they have to maintain the certification. It's pretty stringent. You either have to go to conferences every other year or you have to retake this crazy exam, which is really tough. And a really dense book. So, like, you know that they're on top of it and they're really invested in it. If they are a practitioner, it's not one of those things that you, like, sign up and, you know, as long as you keep paying them, they send you a certificate.
Yeah.
Not like that at all. So, I think it's a really great way to make sure you're dealing with someone that is in tune with some of these things, right? Sexual health, not just menopause, but, like, hormonal and, like, you know, physiological changes that might influence intercourse and sex and sexuality, like, throughout your life. So,
yeah. I would love to be able to link that in the show notes, too, as a resource for people, because just you saying that, I can think of a handful of women in my life, either personally or a client base, that could definitely benefit from this being a resource. Great. So I normally don't go here, but I see that it's on your one sheet, so I would love to chat with you just a bit as we're wrapping up here. And maybe I shouldn't ask, because I'm sure we could talk for hours about this, but Roe versus Wade getting overturned recently. What have you seen? How do you feel like this is going to affect you as a practitioner?
So it's really funny, like, every time this comes up, whether it's in, like, personal conversations with, like, just friends or colleagues, every time anyone says be overturned, like, that those words, I feel like I get punched in the gut. Like, that's how it physically affects me. I get emotional about it. I am an abortion provider. I believe in choice. So it's incredibly important to me that be something that we maintain in this country as best as we can. I live, like I said, in, you know, what would be considered a blue state, but it doesn't make it, you know, impossible for it to become problematic here. You know, even on the East Coast, even in places that you would think are uber liberal, like, it's incredibly threatening what's been happening in Congress and what's been happening in, you know, with the changing of this law and how it's affecting women's health all over the country, and not necessarily intended consequences, right? The focus was on something very specific, but it's hurting women in so many ways, whether it's pregnancies that are a danger to our bodies or whether it's fertility treatments. I mean, the list goes on and on. And it's, you know, I think it's just such a hard thing to express. I don't fault anyone for their personal opinions and their personal, their personal decisions or what they would do in a specific situation. One, I always point out, you never know until you are actually in that position, until you or someone you love is in a difficult position like that. It's not an easy decision for anyone to have to make, but if you don't allow it to be a choice and governed by actual science and medicine, you are making some very dangerous steps. And it really gives me chills to really still, like, I cannot believe that we're living in this year, in this time, that I'm having this debate. It's to me, it should not be a debate. Leave it in the hands of science and doctors. Like, why are we getting involved with politics? I have no idea.
It is so, so wild to me. And I'm glad to hear that we share the same opinions and values on this. As I said, I wouldn't normally bring up political things on a podcast, but.
Yeah. And honestly, like I said, you know, I don't fault people for having their own personal views on this, right? And I think that's where choice comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
It just leaves the option open for people who may really need it. But I think what we're doing wrong is that we're not supporting women in enough angles, right, to be able to say that this is, this cannot be done. Mm-hmm. If this choice is off the table, then you need to put a ton of other choices on the table, and we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're not supporting contraception. We're not supporting other ways to maintain or achieve fertility. Like, we're not supporting those things. So how can you take away choice? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, I think that's, you know, it's disappointing.
Yeah, truly is. Well, thank you so much again for coming on today. This was such a great episode. And as I said in the beginning, it's going to be such a great resource for people that are listening today. So any final words or message that you'd like to share to just wrap this up for women listening?
So I would just say that, you know, again, menopause doesn't need to be the end of anything. It can definitely it's not an easy journey, but if you have the right resources and if you have a supportive provider and if you have resources like this podcast to be able to kind of explore how you can maintain, you know, your sexual health during that time, I think it's really important to kind of still focus on that about yourself, as you go through that.
So. Absolutely. And if you can share with us again where it is that you're located and any contact information that you'd like for people listening if they wanted to reach out.
Sure. I'm in Waynesboro, New Jersey. I have a website where you can sign up. I haven't been doing newsletters that frequently, but there is more information on the website. It's www.drmatthewsqin.com. And then, like I said, the North American Menopause Society, their provider list registry is like an easy way to find a certified menopause practitioner in your area.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely link that because I think that's great. I didn't even know that was something that was available.
I know.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's just a great way to find a provider. Yeah, that kind of listen from this group back. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, great. Well, thank you again so much for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure having you. And again, thank you for the work that you do and being a safe place and person for women to open up and ask the questions and get healthy answers.
Thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate your work as well. It was a great speaking with you today.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you loved it, be sure to subscribe so you never miss a thing. And if you loved it so fucking much, be sure to leave a 5-star review. I'll see you next week, and until then, keep owning your sexual self.